This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I think really relevant for the listeners, because you get to this place where you've got to just figure out what you're really good at and what you want to be even better at and what you want other people to do. And if you're doing the stuff that you want other people to do, then you can't be doing the thing that you're really good at. This can't be it. There has to be more. Wait, am I crazy? No. If you're yearning for more and working hard to make your dreams a reality, then you're in the right place. Welcome to Dreamcatchers. It's the only show committed to helping you self-actualize and then transcend, leaving you with the legacy you've always desired. Listen in on conversations with successful philanthropists, entrepreneurs, and founders every week as we connect with them for inspiration, education, and direction. Your host, Jerome Myers, is here to help you exit the matrix and transform into a leader of your own revolution. The question is, do you believe your dreams should be real? Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Dreamcatchers podcast. I am your host, Jerome, and I've got Colleen in with me today. She and I met almost a year ago. Can you believe that? At a conference in, I don't even remember what city we're in. It was a far away, Vegas. It's funny, financial advisors in Vegas. Seems like it doesn't go together, but it was one of those interactions, one of those meetings where I was like, I hope that I get to build a long, deep relationship with this woman because she is just so amazing. And so when she hopped on, big old smile and just the warmest greeting. And I just knew that you guys were going to be in for one of the best interviews that I've done to date. Colleen, how are things down in Texas?
Oh, Jerome, things are fine. And as I said, it's your smile radiating off of my smile because you bring that energy wherever you are. I love it.
Thank you so much. So I like to open up these shows by saying, so you had an exit.
Yes, I did. I had an exit.
How long were you building the thing that you exited from?
So I started my firm in 1991 and finished the succession plan in 2020.
Okay, so. I'm not good at math, but that sounds like 29 years.
Good math. Yes.
Okay. So 29 years of your life dedicated to building a financial services firm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And you used the word succession plan, which is coming up more and more since I had David Grout Jr. on the show. And he runs Succession Resource Group, and they talk about succession plans. Most people throw around the word exit because I guess that's what's in the press release. But truly, if you're going to transition your company, you need a succession plan, which involves you getting out of the day-to-day so that somebody else can own the company. And the less you're involved, the more valuable it is because the person's truly buying an asset that's creating cash flow for them and doesn't require them to trade their time for money. And so I really love that you drop in a very important word in the beginning, which is a succession plan, because the transition is so important. And so did you get help? Like, how did you know, one, that you could sell the business, and then two, like what steps to go through to get it ready for selling it?
Okay. So maybe I'll take you back to when I started the business, where I was me in the middle of a divorce with a sick three-year-old. And the first year, I think I made $14,000 a year. So my theme song with your wide open mouth is, if I can do this, anybody can do it. I learned that word I is very dangerous. I has a big ego attached to it. And I think for all of us starting a business or doing a startup like I'm doing now, you've got to have a bunch of ego in it. But as soon as it goes to we and collaborating and bringing other people on the team, that I decreases and the we increases. And what you said, Jerome, if we really want to build a business to sell, to exit, we can't be involved in all the day-to-day things. We've got to build a fabulous team, and it's got to be about we and collaboration, or else you've just got a product company that has a really low value, right? So by the time I started the succession plan, I was really only working in the firm 50% of the time. And it's a really good thing. Can you, as an owner, go away for 2 weeks and not have the proverbial shit hit the fan? I mean, in the beginning, of course, some things are going to happen, right? But how do we set that up that it isn't about me? It is about we. It is about the team. It is about when I'd go into a meeting in the financial services firm, meeting someone, the first one of the things I'd say is, you're never going to be able to get a hold of me. And they're like, And as soon as I could, I had someone in the meeting with me, one of the people on the team or another advisor, and was able to say, I have this incredible team around me. They're probably all smarter than me. And if they can't get it done, they know where to find me. But you don't want just one person. You want a moat around you. You want a whole team. And I got a lot of business that way because advisors that were only themselves and one person or whatever, I'd be like, what happens if they get hit by a truck, right? If it's all about one person, it makes it really difficult to sell your firm.
Okay. So how'd you have the courage to do that? Because I think so many people, when they start and they go through exit one, they leave from being an employee and they become chief everything officer. It sounds super glamorous when they say they're CEO of their company of one, but they're chief everything officer. And the ego does grow there. It becomes their identity, and their availability is the thing that people are buying. And so you transition that and you said, okay, I'm going to have exit two, which is actually becoming basically a product manager or a frontline supervisor where you got people doing things for you, but a lot of times you have to tell them what to do. But how'd you get the courage to say, oh, well, it's not me, it's us? Because I think so many people are trying to prove that they are valued.
Yeah, it is a confidence thing, isn't it, Jerome? I think I had some good things and some not so good things of being a single parent in the business. Some of the good things were I had to leave. I had to pick up my son. I had to take him somewhere, or I had to do this, or I had to do that. Without help, I couldn't function, right? So I think I learned at an early age to trust other people and bringing them on board, or I started doing joint work with other financial advisors because they had a lot more wisdom, knowledge, and expertise than I did, especially in the early years. So I didn't have to know everything. What I needed to do was be able to know people like you or people that I could collaborate with, that I could bring into the meeting. So I had somebody that was fabulous at estate planning. I still couldn't learn as much as she knew even back then. I had somebody that was fabulous with investments. So if there was somebody over $10 million of investment assets, I'd bring them in. Somebody that was fabulous at advanced insurance. So part of it is having the confidence and the willingness to give up half the case or half the revenue to bring in these experts. So I became really the expert. I always say I was the expert at asking questions. And what I was the expert at was asking questions about prospects and clients' futures. Where did they really want to go? people forget that there are people's futures attached to their money. Mm-hmm. And I became really good at finding out about the future that they wanted to have. So the other thing, so there are people who wake up every day that love doing input on financial plan. I got to a place maybe 15 years in that I didn't even know how to implement, put stuff into. When you say chief everything officer, you're working at night, putting all the input into the software, running the proposals, doing all that stuff. I purposely sold. I had $500 million of assets under management. We had financial planning fees, life insurance, long-term care, disability. We had a full planning, estate planning. I never learned how to do Excel. People are like, you have to. You have such a... Nope. I've got really good people who love Excel. But it was a way when you said, how do you stop being chief everything officer? If I don't learn Excel or I don't learn Canva or if I don't learn PowerPoint, then I have to rely on someone else. Mm-hmm. So it was a way to keep me on my side of the line, what I did best, which was having conversations. So you go from being chief everything officer to staying in your lane. And I'm sure anyone else who's run a company knows that if you can do it, you can always probably do it better, right? It's like, and you try to take it back. I couldn't try to take it back because I didn't know how to do it. It was a way I protected myself.
That is a really interesting approach because I hear so many people say, oh, I don't want to be dependent or relying on anybody. And you said, no, I'm making myself dependent on you. And if you don't do it, then, you know, we'll have to figure it out another way. But I'm making myself dependent on you. Is that a lack of ego? Or is it a lack of ego? Or is it, I guess a better way of asking, is it ego when you say you don't want to depend on anybody?
I think so. I think ego comes in when we have to be, it has to be about us. When it has to be about us, when we have to know everything, when our name has to be on the door, when people have to come to us, then I think that's ego. When it is about we, when it is about collaboration, and we've all had not right fit team members. So I'm not saying that mistakes don't happen, but they are mistakes and you learn from it and you go forward on it. But when we go to we, the ego has to diminish. And I do believe, though, Jerome, if we haven't been chief everything officer, if we haven't had to build that confidence, I think most of us as entrepreneurs started off having to do everything. And most of us in the corporate world did. And as we grow and learn, the more we know, the more we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we know, the better and better we get at questions and not have to know the answer. You can ask me a question, Jerome, and I'm like, gosh, I have no idea. But my job is to find out who I can get that answer from. I know I can do that. I know I can do that. I can search for that.
Mm. Yeah. Sometimes I worry that I'm becoming lazy when I think about AI and spell correct and or autocorrect and a bunch of other things that technology's allowing us to do that we don't have to spend our time on. Like, my kids can ask me a question. I don't know the answer. I can Google it. And then it's like, well, is there any loss in my credibility because I didn't know the answer? It's something that I think about from time to time, especially over the weekend. They were asking me some questions and some of them were idealistic. Like, we watched Black Panther and my youngest daughter was like, why did they kill the queen? And so we went into why that they needed the moral dilemma. And I couldn't defer that to ChatGPT. But then somebody may ask me about the score of a game or who won or who a good player is. And I can look that up as my older daughter really loves hockey. And so
Ooh,
we spend quite a bit of time talking about hockey. So this is, I think, really relevant for the listeners because you get to this place where you've got to just figure out what you're really good at and what you want to be even better at and what you want other people to do. And if you're doing the stuff that you want other people to do, then you can't be doing the thing that you're really good at. And it sounds like you got really clear on that early, which is, I'm good at having conversations. I'm good at being in meetings. I'm good at the client relationship piece of it. And I'll call you a rainmaker, even though you probably would never say that about yourself, but I'm good at being the rainmaker. And I can hire other people to take care of these people once I get them in the door. How did you find that was your thing? Was it something that you've always been good at, or did you grow into it over the course of your ownership?
I think we all grow into it over the course of our ownership if we want a life outside of work. Right. We can all do all these things, but if we want a life outside of work, really paying attention to what it is that we have superior skill, we can continue to learn, it creates energy, and we love to do, which I found out about that in a program called Strategic Coach, and that's called Unique Ability. And knowing my Colby, which is an assessment about how we take action, knowing my print, which is another assessment that's used a lot in corporate, which is about why we do the things we do, and then the Clifton strengths. If I can focus on strengths, our first grade and second grade teachers like focus on your weakness, and we're all like, no, focus on your strengths. Spend more time in your strengths. And as you said, the people skills and the question skills, it really allows me to focus in on the client and what's most important to them. No client was paying me to spell words correctly or to put a plan together or make sure there was coffee in the conference room. Nobody was paying me to do that, right? What they were paying me for was to be in conversation with them about their life, themselves, or their family, or their legacy, their future. That's what they were paying me for, right? And so if I can get ChatGPT, or you can outsource, there are so many CEOs, entrepreneurs, business owners, so many of us are doing $20, $25 an hour work. That's not what they're paying us for. And the sooner we realize that, the sooner we can let go and do what we do well and really appreciate others and what they do well, which makes for continuing that, as you said, there's so many levels to exit. You've got to exit a lot of the day-to-day stuff to elevate.
Yeah, we've identified 8 exits. And I think over your journey, we've gotten to 3, with the 4th one being, did you have a board or did you go straight from just being an owner to exiting your company?
I didn't have a board. We had multiple people on the team. We had other advisors on the team. We did a lot of joint work with other people. And to me, my board were my colleagues at Strategic Coach. But it was not a defined board. No, it's a good thing. It's one of those things that was like, gosh, that would have been to have a client board or clients with some other advisors on it or other impactful, other people that are ahead of you. I think that would have been very good.
Yeah, that is something that I see people skip over a lot, but most of the people that I see skip over that don't have a life outside of work. And you made it very clear early on that having life outside of what you do to make money is important. And one, you said, I had to pick my son up from school or daycare or wherever. So that responsibility was something that kept you pulled out of being too deep in the business. But was that the main reason why, or did you have an understanding that there's more to Colleen's life than going and serving her clients at our company? And she gets to explore those things in addition to building a company.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if I know the answer to that. What I do know is I've always said, I really hope they don't put on my tombstone, she was a great financial advisor first, right? Or a great business owner first. I want them to put, she was a great mom, she was a great sister, she was a great daughter. Now I'm married again and a bonus mom. I want those things first. And in order to have those things first, and I believe for my team as well, that definition of balance is to move in a swinging and swaying motion. That's actually Webster. So there are times when I am more engaged at work, and there are times when I'm more engaged with the family. And sometimes there's the middle time. But I also want, if I'm going to leave to pick my son up at school, I want my team members to have that flexibility too. It's not like all for one, one for all. We want a culture and created a culture that was really important. Don't get me wrong. We had lots of fabulous results. And I am a results person. So, but it all comes together when you can wrap that around the culture of the organization.
A lot of people want to unlock their ultimate potential but lack the strategy, support, and stamina necessary to achieve their major goals. They often try to overcome these challenges by trying to do it on their own, causing frustration, fatigue, and eventually failure. We have developed a model for a center life, aka the red pill, to help them bolster their beliefs, gain clarity on their path to success, and provide accountability as they take action on their goals. When they take the red pill, they rapidly accelerate attainment of their goals and begin to experience a life of significance and impact. Want to find out more? Hop over to JeromeMyers.co. Now, let's get back to the episode. So when folks are open to people having lives outside of work, sometimes that gets taken advantage of, I'll say. Sometimes people will go a little too far with it. How did you manage that?
For all of us, with things that happen really well and things that don't happen well, we use a tool from Coach called the Experience Transformer. It's actually pretty easy. What worked? What didn't work? What do we need to put in place? So we would have an Experience Transformer for every month that we were there, every quarter, so that we could see if something happened with an individual person, then we do the same thing. What worked last week? You left, you got this. What didn't work? You did not get your work done. What do we need to put in place for next week and the next quarter to make sure that doesn't happen again? It's usually more about process than people, but people take advantage of it, then it's probably not a right fit person for the team. Yeah, and those are hard. Those are so hard. One of my coaches early in my career, like year 10, when I was like, oh, I lost another team member. I had to hire another person. Oh, I lost another, hired again, whatever. He said, Colleen, the clearer you get with your vision, the quicker people leave. The clearer you get with your vision, the quicker people leave. And I found that to be very true. But I also found the clearer I get with my vision and are able to communicate it with everybody on the team about where we're going, the stickier team members were, yeah. Right? They want to be with a leader that has vision. So if it's a right fit team member and the leader isn't sharing vision, they tend to want to leave because they don't know where you're going. So the clearer you get with your vision, the stickier people are in your organization as well, I think.
It's an attract or repel thing, like values, right? Mm-hmm. If you're upfront and outward about what you believe and why you believe it, people are either going to want to be more around that or less around it. Okay, so this is one of my favorite parts of the conversation. So did you get a check or did you get the wire when you sold it?
Do I admit this? I financed it.
All of it? You owner financed? No, yes. You got some.
I owner financed. I'm being honest. Okay. Yeah. Now, wait, let's go back a second. First off, I believe if you really want to find the right fit person to take over your company, for me, it needed to be a win to the fourth. A win for me, a win for the other owner, the new owner, a win for the team, and a win for the clients. There's a lot of people that all they care about is how much money. And that's okay. There's not a judgment on that. But when you're trying to have a win to the fourth, it's like dating. You end up, I had three big dates that didn't work before I met the fourth. And in order to make that work, that was a situation that I could do because I had done a great job and I'd get the company back if that didn't happen, but there was no way that wasn't going to happen. So yeah, I know. Don't go there with me, Jerome.
No, I'm not going anywhere. I am. So you're the first person out of all the interviews that we've done where you financed the whole deal. Mm. And that is a very interesting approach. Now, there's positive tax consequences for you by doing it that way. But so few people actually move into that position. They might do a small part or they might get some stock or something if they sell to a larger company. But your approach and then your win to the fourth is a really cool example of how you can accomplish and design your dream exit. So the reason why I asked if you got the check or if you did get the wire is just because most people on that day, they're looking at more money than they've ever had in their possession at one time.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah. For me, I knew that money was going to be coming in. They paid it off. He paid it off 2 years early. So it's worked. It was done. It was a good thing for them and a good thing for me because the interest rate I was able to get. When you financially can do those things, that's a different story, right? It's a different conversation. Also, I did a succession plan, which was 3 years. I probably would not do that. I would not recommend that. 2 years was good. We had so many multi-generational families and so much high net worth. It took time to build that trust. It wasn't just a book of business. It was a book of families. So 3 years was too long. It did happen that the third year was COVID. And so I was there during COVID, basically having online coffees with clients, calming them down. And I was thinking, man, I wish I had had somebody on my team during September 11th in 2008, 2009. That was, you know, but 2 years would have been sufficient.
Okay. So you finance it. It goes as planned, evidently, because he paid it off prior to what the note said. Mm-hmm. And during that time, are you involved in the company at all? Or are you off to the next thing?
I stayed for those 3 years during the succession. I was still there 50% of the time. I wasn't going to work more. The first year had more client meetings, but I had a great team. I didn't need to be there. All I was doing was causing problems. If I'm there more than that, right? So I had been percolating on this idea of a new startup company, which I didn't have time for because I didn't want to work more than 50% of the time. So I did start with that. I've spoken a lot to a bunch of financial planning organizations and everything on how we built this company, how we built this company and the collaboration and the team. And also, I kept thinking, how do we put these questions in a process in some kind of assessment? And I met somebody, Jeannie Hurlburt, a PhD sociologist, amazing woman about creating assessments and using the right language. And we now have a patent pending on two assessments, one for ages 45 and under, and one over the age 45 that advisors are using with prospects and clients, doing what I was doing, but in a process, in a repeatable process. This thing that I made so much money and created so much value over the years is now in a repeatable process that any advisor can use. So I think I had a lot of loss. You and I talked about it for a little bit. There were 10 clients that I was like, if you need me, these were big, complex family situations. If you need me, I'm here. I'll sit in. Mm-hmm. Not one call. They called me about coming to family events. They called me about new idea. They called me about going and doing things. But we had created this trust and had such a great team around them, that ego part. I'd done such a good job of it. I forgot that when you leave, there is that loss. It's like, oh, they really don't need me. It's like when your kids go to college. Oh, they really don't.
You did a good job.
If you've done a good job, right? But the loss is there. It is there.
So you stayed around for the 3 years and then it was over and you started the new company to help people figure out how to get folks into the business. Basically, you were helping them with their fact finding is the way I would describe it.
Yeah.
And then, but was there a gap in between your last day at the financial services firm? You roll right into it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The third year I was doing things concurrently because we were designing and talking with advisors and trying to figure out how we could create value in their future. So there really wasn't a gap. And I've got friends who have sold their companies and who are golfing or whatever. And my husband was a big C-suite guy. And as he says, there's only so much golf. There's only so much whatever. It is finding that purpose. And that's one of the mindset with the assessments that we do, finding that purpose. What is that next thing? It's what many of us forget to pay attention to while we're working.
Yeah. And so we wrote a book called Your Next, and it dives into the founder's exit paradox and a lot of the things. So like in the founder's exit paradox, there's six centers of doubt. You feel it around your self-image because most people tie up so much of their identity in the thing that they do to earn money. Mm-hmm. Relationships, for a lot of people, 60% of the five people that they spend the most time with, or three out of the five people they spend the most time with, are tied to their business. And so if you walk away from that business, then those people are no longer in your life in the way that they were prior to. When it comes to work changes because you're not doing what you were doing. There's usually some non-compete agreement or some sort, or non-solicitation agreement of some sort. And so you've got to figure out something else to earn. And then there's a lot of people trade in their health in order to build the company, and they question whether or not they actually did it what they were supposed to do, or wonder if they can actually get it back. The prosperity one is one that I think a lot of people struggle with, because they either are like, why don't I spend all the money because I've been waiting so long to get this money?
Right.
Or I'm worried about running out of money, so I don't spend any of the money. And they don't find that space in the center where they can enjoy, invest, and do whatever saving they need to do as well as giving. And then the last one is the significance piece. And it sounds like what you did was bottle up your superpower. Right. That supreme talent that you have, your unique ability, if you want to use coach language. And you're sharing that with the world in patented process.
Yes.
Now, I don't think most people know what that looks like, but how did you identify that was the way that you wanted to spend time?
For me, one of the things that I love is impact. And just like you, Jerome, you have such impact in what you're doing. Someone told me the other day, it's like a waterfall that trickles down. You have these conversations and the people that you're coaching, and then it's just a trickle down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I get to do that with coaching. It has always been a side gig. And then with financial advisors, I believe they're one of the most impactful groups of people on the planet, because they can help people get to where they want to go. It's not just about the money, right? It's about how do you connect the money with passion? So if I can support them, if I can help them in their discovery process and make it quick and easy to see if it's a right fit client, if they can add value in their future really quick, if we can give them some action items, even somebody putting $50 a month in that maybe the advisor can't spend time with, but they can have them do this assessment and they can already start working on things, it has a huge impact. And so for me, impact is really key. And I can do it in my nonprofit work. And I can do it. This is a lot of wisdom, lots of years that I've spent in the financial services industry. So why not take those 30 years and bottle it up? I also love doing things at the food bank. So, but I think this I can do and have fun with.
Well, I don't think you shouldn't be thinking because you're doing it. So you should know that you could do it and you see it in the marketplace. What's really cool about your journey is you've built teams at every juncture. You found amazing people who are world-class, best in class, and helped them unlock their gifts and talents. And you've been the amplifier for them, which I think is the quintessential toolkit of somebody who's going to achieve big results. It's so impressive because few people can actually make other people better, right? And get them in a space where they can shine. It's all about putting people in the right position. Yeah. And I think that may be your superpower more than your process for, you know, fact-finding clients and getting them to convert. But no, but. And I think the ability to create the system is just other world there. So as you were going through the process of figuring out this next thing, because I think most people have no idea how they're going to figure out what they're going to do next. Mm-hmm. Did you take time to actually reflect on what you had done? It sounds like you were doing that on a quarterly or a monthly basis already. But
yeah.
So we call that nourishing, and that's the in and next. And so you reflected on what you did, decouple or strip that away from what was the old firm and said, hey, this is me. This is my IP. This is my system. This is valuable and I can take this and use this in another way. And then there's the E in next, which stands for evaluate. And so can we talk about the process of you evaluating the alternatives?
Sure. So for evaluating this little thing called activity inventory, about what are all the things that I did last month or the month before? I try to do it by the month because I can't remember back a quarter or two quarters. No. And you can see from those activities which ones really give you joy, which ones are you really good at? Because this amplification, I love your word amplifier. We amplify when we are enjoying what we're doing, when we have really good skill around it, when we want to keep learning about it. So when I can sit down, and I do a gratitude journal every day. I do put in things that I do so that I can look back and see. And I just think about what brings a smile to my face. What was it that I felt that was really good? And yeah, it's exercise as well. I want to weave that into my day. I want to weave in time with friends and family. Those things are really important. So it's not just about, oh, I started a new startup. It's still all that weaving of all those things that are nourishing, right? Yeah.
Okay. And so then the X is exploration. And so did you know this was a thing and it worked right from the jump, or did you have to explore and play around and figure some stuff out?
Yeah, I'm still exploring this new company and financial advisors and how it works and how it doesn't work. And I'm still exploring other fun health things. And I think for me, if I quit exploring, I'm probably going to try because I love the exploring part. I love the having conversations with you, Jerome, and reading your book and then, oh, that, and I could send that to this. To me, that's all. And I love reading, right? So it is all part of exploring.
Mm. And then the T is transcend. And I think this is the implementation. And so you've talked about having employees. So if you have employees, then it's likely you have revenue. So it's likely that this is working for some people somewhere.
Right.
And you're learning from the fact that people are implementing this, what works, what doesn't work. And I think that in and of itself gives you data so that you can help more people. Yes. But I'm putting words in your mouth. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Our assessments have data that go that advisors have as well. So the data is that there's so much data, which isn't necessarily my big deal. It's Jeannie's big deal. But the continuation of making mistakes and being okay and feeling confident, and whether it's in any of those areas, we have homes in two places, and always trying to tweak that and explore and figure out what's working for us and what's working for our family. I think it's the same thing. And I believe that one of our kids said, "Why are you still working?" Right? Mm-hmm. Because I love it. And because I think money's really good. And mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of stuff I can do with it. I think I can do a lot of good with it. And so it's fine with me.
I think good people should have a lot of money because good things happen when good people have money.
Yeah.
So you've gone through the process and you'll continue to go through the process because it's not a process that ends.
It is, but like a circle. It's like a, yeah. As
it's
I read,
iterative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As I read your book, I was like, yeah. Or a spiral. Something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the hope is you keep going up. So.
There are some times when I go backwards. I'm just saying.
Well, I think we all do, but it's only to level set because we might have got to a place where we don't like it and come back down to go back up and go up faster and higher. It is part of the process for many of us. So as we wind this thing down, two questions that I like to wrap up with. And the first one is thinking about all the stuff that we've covered and thinking about your vast network. What other founder, what other NEO should be a guest on the Dreamcatchers podcast?
Oh, great question. A man by the name of David Engel, who's up in Canada, who has reinvented himself many times that I think and exited and redone and is doing. I think he would be wonderful.
All right, David, we're going to holler at you, man. We're going to have you on the show. And then the final question, and this is always my favorite question because it puts a bow on top. Well, it's probably more of a cherry on this ice cream sundae. What's the one thing you want the listeners to take away? Because we've covered a lot of ground. We've been through six of the exits. We've talked about next. We've talked about the six centers of doubt. What is the thing that they should know?
To listen to themselves. And if they have a spouse or a partner listening there, it is, I didn't make the decision in a vacuum. I started the company in a vacuum, but I didn't make the decision in a vacuum. And listening to my own inner guidance and listening to really that nourishing part, Jerome, what nourishes me? Because I think in the beginning, my dad died when I was young. We had $187 in the bank, six kids. I started this company with a sick three-year-old single mom. Peter and I didn't even start dating until he was in college. So, I think anybody listening has the same ability in the sense of that I do to be there. And if I could have spent more time in the nourishing part, both for the exit, but also in the beginning, to put your own oxygen mask on first. I think many of us are really helpful about putting others on. And to me, I think that's all with listening. I think that's it.
I think some people's lives are so busy and noisy that they can't hear, mm-hmm. and slowing down for long enough to be able to hear the message and then surrender to it is something that you've done over and over again. Colleen, you're a dream catcher, and it just makes me glow from the inside out hearing your journey and seeing the good girls win when so many people believe that they're stuck and they have to be and they can't transcend. And without you grinding and sacrificing everything in order to achieve what you've been able to achieve and accomplish. So thank you so much for being a light of hope for all those out there who don't want to subscribe to hustle culture and giving up everything for the sake of earning another dollar.
Thank you, Jerome. You are as well.
All right. So this wraps up the episode. I don't know if your hands hurt, but if they don't, you probably didn't take enough notes. So to the listeners, I want you to go back and play this one again, because even though she did it subtly, she dropped so many jewels that can help you find fulfillment and live the life of your wildest dreams. Until the next time, your dreams should be real. We'll talk to you in the next episode.
Thank you for joining the tribe today. We would love to hear from you. Please don't forget to rate, like, and share. Perhaps someone you know could benefit from what we've discussed. Until the next time, remember that your dreams should be real.